Medicaid in Wisconsin is state government's single most expensive program. In the year that ended June 30th, it cost $6.7 billion, and that's with a B. But it is also one of the most popular programs in state government. Right now, 1.16 million people, or about one in five Wisconsin residents, get all or part of their health care through that program. But Governor Scott Walker, in a New York Times article last week, said this: Medicaid in its present outdated form is unsustainable. So it's time for a Newsmakers on Medicaid with our Secretary of Health Services, Dennis Smith. Dennis, thanks very much for coming in. You have had a very busy, you've been around the state listening sessions on this and other healthcare programs. You just joined state government in January. Boy, been quite a 4 months, hasn't it?
It has indeed. It's great to be with you today. But we, as you said, we've been out talking to the people of Wisconsin, whom I consider to be the real experts, the people who use our programs and the people who deliver the services through our programs. And they have lots of ideas.
They have lots of opinions and lots of ideas.
Indeed.
And we'll get into that in a little bit. Give us a primer. Give us a Medicaid 101. It was created in 1965. And how has it evolved over the last 40-whatever years?
Medicaid has really become three different programs. It's really for health insurance for low-income individuals, and perhaps this is where the mission has changed the most. When Medicaid was first created, it was exclusively for people who were on cash assistance, the old AFDC program.
Yeah.
It's considered medical assistance, not health insurance. But you went to a doctor or to a hospital, and Medicaid would pay your bill for you directly. Today, only about 30% of all the kids who are on Medicaid would be in a family that received cash assistance. So over the years, Medicaid's mission has grown to where we are serving more and more people, and indeed many above the federal poverty line. But we treat it still the way it was originally designed. We have these sort of obsolete structure of mandatory benefits and an optional benefit. To give you an example, prescription drugs is an optional benefit. Of course, we know today how vital prescription drugs are.
Right.
So when
senior care, 90,000 Wisconsin resident, excuse me, I interrupted you.
That's home and community-based services. Again, yes. In the old model of Medicaid, you're entitled to a nursing home bed. That's not where most people want to be. They want to be in their own home. They want to receive services in their community. So that's what we mean about the original framework of Medicaid being obsolete.
So, the program as it exists in 2011 bears no resemblance to when it was created in 1965, correct?
The people have changed, but the program has not kept pace with who we are serving today.
Okay, well, let's take a first look at who is on Medicaid in Wisconsin. So, we've worked up some information, and let's, first of all, our caseload now, as I said, 1,164,000, and that's as of March. That's one in five. And we'll get into its growth because only four or five years ago it was one in eight. So we now have one in five Wisconsin residents.
One in three children.
Thank you. So overall, all residents, one in five, but one in three Wisconsin children. That's a stunning number. Okay, but boring down a little bit more, 59% of those are women. And are most of them single with children, or who, is there an average woman on this program in Wisconsin, Mr. Smith?
Well, again, typically when you go back to traditional Medicaid, it had to be for a family with dependent children. And for those income levels, typically you would not have a two-parent family that whose earnings were so low as to qualify for Medicaid.
Okay.
So traditionally, it has been typically a mom and dependent children. A man would be on Medicaid only if they had a disability or was elderly in a nursing home. But even that is now changing to where two-parent families become eligible.
So 59% of those on MA in Wisconsin are female, 41% male. But another number I find interesting, number of children on MA, 460,000, sir?
Yes.
That is 40% of our MA caseload is children. Are those children under 18, under 15? What?
Typically 18 and younger makes up the majority of those numbers. And again, this is where we have seen that as Medicaid has expanded further up the income scale, that it has served more children. If you go back, when the state children's health insurance program was reauthorized
CHIPS, yes.
in 2007, for example, and here it's Badger Care in Wisconsin, the number of kids below 200% of poverty had actually declined in that two-year period. So states continued to expand further and further up the income scale is part of the reason for that growth in the program.
States like the state of Wisconsin expanded up the income scale. Which gets me to my next subject, the tremendous growth in our MA caseloads in Wisconsin. 4 years ago, there were 837,000 on the MA caseload. Now there's 1.164 million. Did your predecessors, did the policymakers of the last 8 years act irresponsibly by growing our caseload?
I think that the caseload is a combination of things. One, specifically expanding, going up higher on the income scale.
Okay.
And I think to some extent, people didn't pay enough attention to what we call the crowd out effect, in which you build a government program if you make it so much more generous than what somebody could get in the private sector in terms of benefits and cost sharing, then you have created an incentive to move over to the public side. That's part of it, but certainly the economy, is, especially in the last 2 years,
sure.
has been a part of that as well. So it's a combination of those two different things. But as we should expect the economy to recover, enrollment should go back down. But there's a lot of concern that, again, there's such an inequity now between the public and the private sector. We have heard from a number of people, individuals who are Medicaid themselves, employers who are saying, we can't afford to work those additional hours. Mm-hmm. We can't afford to take a promotion, to take a raise, because if I do, my income is going to go up and I'm going to lose eligibility.
No, we're going to qualify for Badger Care.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. We need to, Medicaid is now playing a very important role in the overall economy itself as well. So policymakers need to be aware of that interaction of what is happening between the public programs and economic growth, quite frankly.
Well, let's look at the numbers and how our program is, the cost of our program has gone up 48% in 4 years. So we have a caseload jump of 39%, but a cost jump of 48%. MA, as I said, in the year that ended June 30th, $6.7 billion. This is all funds, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Up from $5 billion in 2007, 2008, up from $4.5 billion in 2005, 2006. Let's talk about the $6.7 million that MA cost Wisconsin last year. What's the single biggest cost driver in that, Mr. Secretary?
As I said, Medicaid really is different programs serving different populations. Clearly, the most expensive component of Medicaid is the long-term care component. So people
nursing homes?
Nursing homes, but also home and community-based services, family care, which audit just came out on family care.
Yes, yesterday.
But if for an individual using long-term care is a per member basis is $42,000 in Wisconsin for their long-term care needs.
What does that mean? Somebody on MA
who is using long-term care.
Is that in their home or in a nursing home, sir?
That's all combined.
Okay.
So those are all claims, whether in a nursing home or in an intermediate care type facility or in their own home. So everyone combined, that is the average cost of an individual using long-term care, $42,000. Wisconsin is a bit disproportionate to the rest of the country. Typically, long-term care is a third to 35% of the Medicaid budget. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, it's well over 40% of our budget. Then you look at the acute care needs of an individual who has a disability or the elderly. And again, most of our elderly population, Medicare is going to be picking up their acute care needs. So there's not a lot of acute care costs, although Medicaid pays for wraparound services to a Medicare beneficiary. We're paying their deductible. We're paying the cost sharing that they may be liable for. An individual who either has a disability or an elderly is about $7,800 for their acute care costs.
Okay.
Then typically a non-disabled adult, you're around $3,500. And then a child is around $1,500.
Let me ask you, how does our $42,000 average for long-term care to other states, higher or lower?
We're, I think, a little bit higher than most states. And again, this is where we need to become more innovative and creative about how we deliver those services, but in a way that is at a better value for the taxpayer as well.
Let's go, let's bore down a little bit into what some of these MA clients cost. You know, your office gave me this amazing stat. 75% of those on MA are responsible for only 14% of spending?
Yes, sir.
But 5% cost 58%.
Right.
What does that mean? Are these nursing homes?
These are high-cost individuals, maybe in a nursing home, but they also have complex medical conditions. But they're often...
Wow.
In a fee-for-service environment. So they're seeing multiple doctors, getting multiple prescriptions, and no one is coordinating their care. So 5% of the population spending 58% of our dollars means we need to go out and find who they are and make certain that those individuals are getting good, high-quality health care, because poor quality of care costs the most,
yes.
Believe me.
Yes.
But when your care is not being coordinated, that is what drives up the cost. You're getting seniors who are on too many prescription drugs, and the care is simply not being, you're going to multiple doctors, and we need to get individuals, those high-cost individuals, into some type of a care management situation.
These high cost, what do they cost? Do we have some that cost us $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year?
We do. We have.
What's the highest you've ever seen? Just in the state of Wisconsin, because I know you have a lot of national experience, but in the state of Wisconsin?
Well over $500,000.
And that would be a person who what?
Clearly has complex medical needs.
Okay.
You have many healthcare conditions that are on prescription drugs that are extremely expensive themselves.
Okay.
When you think of HIV, AIDS drugs and the combinations, those can be very expensive. Factor for an individual who has hemophilia, for example,
mm-hmm.
Those are just very high cost cases. And again, we want to make certain those individuals have access to high quality of care. But we have a lot of individuals underneath that who are driving up costs because they're not in any type of a managed care situation.
And the final part of this cost issue is, in a few months, we go back to the formula of the Fed's paying 60%. It's a little bit higher now because of the stimulus money, isn't it?
Correct.
Temporary.
Right.
Okay. So MA is paid 60%, will be paid as of July, 60% federal dollars, 40% state dollars. But you still run the single most expensive state program. So, which gets me to my next question. Governor Walker brought you in because, as he told the New York Times, the program is not sustainable. I've heard you tell lawmakers and I've heard you tell others it is not sustainable. Why?
Because the cost of the program is growing faster than the state revenue. In the new fiscal year, literally, we will get all new general purpose revenue
growth
coming
in tax
to our
collections?
Department. Income taxes, sales taxes,
corporate.
Excise taxes all come, every new dime of revenue will be coming to us. That's what makes the program unsustainable. We cannot continue to, when we have, and at the federal level as well, when revenues are growing at 3.5 to 4%, but Medicaid is growing at 7%, you know you have an imbalance there that cannot be sustained in the long run.
Well, I talked to you a few months ago, and you really hadn't got, Governor Walker had not presented his budget, and you hadn't been out on the road. So now, the benefit of what you heard and where you are now, how can Wisconsin come up with a plan to, are we talking cut its MA costs or hold down the increase, sir?
Well, first of all, the deficit that we face is $1.8 billion over the biennium.
Over 2 years.
Governor Walker has proposed closing most of that gap with the new revenue. So his budget puts in $1.2 billion.
Okay, so of the 1.8, that's the deficit estimate, you're going to get all new revenue, 1.2, that's $600 million.
Correct. You've
got to prune.
That we still have to find a way to close that gap. We can close that gap. It'll be easier to close the gap over a 24-month period, though, rather than a 12-month period. And many of your listeners may recall some of the controversy over the proposal to give us emergency rulemaking authority.
Yes.
That was simply about the calendar.
Yes.
Again, when you have to find the savings, the longer period of time you can generate those savings, then the less difficult of the task itself. But I think you have to look in a number of different ways. And again, we've gotten great suggestions and recommendations from people across the state, people who are on Badger Care. They have themselves said, yes, we can pay more in premiums and cost sharing. They know what a value they are getting, especially when you compare it to the private sector. So individuals themselves have said, we can pay more.
Of the gap here, the $600 million, do you have an estimated number that making them pay more, you'd like to make up $600 million and of that get X amount from making them pay more?
I don't have specific numbers on each one of these,
okay.
What they would generate.
Okay.
And there isn't going to be one big thing. It has to be a series of things. You have to look at, again, people taking greater responsibility for the cost of their care. Service delivery reform itself. We've got to move our providers from a volume-based to a value-based system. And we've gotten great response from pharmacists, from hospitals, from physicians, who said, yes, we know that the tide is turning, and we want a better healthcare system in which you don't pay just across the board, because then when savings have to come across physician reimbursement, reimbursement for dentists, reimbursement for pharmacists, those are always sort of on the first, you know, everybody's at the top of the list. You can't keep doing that either. If you keep taking it out of providers, you end up eventually denying access to individuals, and then they're ending up in the emergency room, so you're not really saving money. But they recognize that healthcare as a whole, compensation is changing from payment based on volume to value, mm-hmm. and they have become willing partners in that respect. Then we also have ways that we think that looking at the family care program, and again, very popular, but we also know a great many challenges with that. Under the previous budget, family care was going to be expanded further to additional counties.
Yes.
And we have put that expansion on hold. So that will account for some of those savings. But you really do have to look across the board. It's not one area that you can generate those kinds of savings from.
What's your response to the audit that was just released yesterday on family care?
I think the audit was an important step. It showed us some places where we need to look, which we had come to that conclusion as well. There are some serious issues that we have a couple of different managed care organizations that are responsible for family care. They're in financial difficulties. They're kind of on the brink. We have a lot of programmatic things that we need to look at in terms of how are we helping people if they need services, are there community services to turn to first? Medicaid's supposed to be the payer of last resort. That's mm-hmm. where you're supposed to come to last. Mm-hmm. So we want to make certain families are taking full advantage of what's out there in the community before they turn to their neighbor asking them for to pay for services that might otherwise be available.
One of the governor's original budget recommendations was that everyone that's on senior care should apply for Medicare Part D. Now, there's not the political support on the Joint Finance Committee for that. Even the co-chairman says we're going to keep senior care. What's your thinking right now on how do we tweak or reinvent that program?
We know senior care is very popular.
Yes. And you've been hearing that around the state and in the Capitol.
Very much so. There are only about 12% of seniors who are actually on senior care. You would think, as popular as it is, everybody thinks they're on senior care.
Yes.
And maybe they do think they're on senior care. But most of our seniors...
Lawmakers think every one of their constituents, to hear them talk.
Exactly.
Excuse me for interrupting.
It is very popular, no doubt about that. Our proposal was simply to align senior care with the rest of Medicare, which is you're eligible for Part A, you go and apply for Part A. You're eligible for Part B, you go to apply for that. So it's simple symmetry of what our proposal is. That's the way it works in the rest of the world. We have about 12,000 of our seniors who are already both on senior care and in Part D.
In Part D.
So again, this is not a wild idea. This is how most of the world works. We understand, though, how popular senior care is. Some of the senior groups have put together a new proposal, and I don't think it saves the taxpayer the money of the governor's proposal. We think the governor's proposal is still the best proposal that is out there. But clearly, members of the legislature, this is an area that they're going to want to weigh in on.
Another area of the governor's budget, the counties don't like the idea to transfer income maintenance to state government. There was just a compromise announced on that, I think, within the last 24 hours. Are you willing to compromise on that idea, sir?
We've been hearing that there's a proposal. We haven't actually seen it, so we're anxious to get it and see what is being proposed. But again, there are some interesting dynamics that are going on. And the reason why we proposed it was, first, Medicaid eligibility has been simplified. So there are no asset tests any longer for the moms and kids population. It's a pretty straightforward way to determine income, your family size, a few questions that are readily, you can get to pretty easily determine eligibility.
Okay.
So Medicaid eligibility in the first place. Information technology, we know already through both in Wisconsin and around the country, people are now applying online. They're applying at states have kiosks where you can fill out your application and send it in to where it's all centralized.
We don't have those yet, do we?
We don't.
Are we going to get them?
That would be part of our proposal.
Go to the mall and actually apply?
Actually, to be able to, again, I think we can give people more access to be able to apply for the programs.
Would there be someone there to walk my mother-in-law through it?
That will be part of it as well. We have in the governor's budget a proposal to expand to two more what are called ADRCs, the Aging Disability Resource Centers, to give people the information that they need to be able to make wise decisions. Then we have in quite frankly the move to health exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Again, determining Medicaid eligibility is supposed to be part of those health exchanges.
Right.
People will be coming to those exchanges not knowing whether they're Medicaid eligible or eligible for tax subsidies.
When do those kick in? Is it 2014?
2014, yes.
2014, sir. Health exchanges.
So I don't think people, the average person would find it acceptable to say, oh, you have to go down to the local social services to apply.
But
people are going to want access beyond what is available today.
I've still talked to some county people who say, we see some people who need to have the face-to-face interaction with the caseworker.
And I would agree with that. Okay. And there are people who need the extra help. People, they don't have the literacy skills that they may need. And we agree that there will still be a need for one-on-one assistance, but that would be part of our plan.
Okay, so both on family care and senior care and transfer of the maintenance programs, there are still some compromises that are possible.
Well, again, I think that those compromises have to include finding savings, because we know these other approaches will save the taxpayers' money.
That's that $600 million shortfall.
Yes, sir.
Right.
That needs to be part of the equation.
The Governor Walker wrote the New York Times, and I just want to quote from one segment last week. It's a document I'm sure you're familiar with. Medicaid in its present outdated form is unsustainable. Block grants would bring a truce to the tug of wars between Washington and the states. This is the best option for Medicaid facing a midlife crisis to survive. Why would block grants be so much better than our current system that you're now wrestling with?
First, to actually manage the Medicaid system itself. The federal government has seized greater and greater control. They are becoming more and more micromanaging the states, which I think is a major mistake. So we truly have lost the flexibility to manage the program itself. So that is a large component. Secondly, on the financial side, it will bring stability, discipline, and predictability to both the states and the federal governments. And I think that is a good approach. We also have the experience now. Again, block grants were proposed in the 80s, in the 90s, in the early 2000s. We now have more than 10 years of experience with the state Children's Health Insurance Program. What is that? It's a block grant.
Okay.
We have a number of states that have the experience of doing what are called 1115 demonstration programs or a comprehensive waiver. Guess what? Badger Care was an 1115 waiver. That's the way it started. So we have overcome the hurdle of the uncertainty. We know what states can do and, again, manage their programs that are more effective and also improve services. We go back to home and community-based waivers. We've had home and community-based waivers for 30 years now. It's time to move beyond waivers. But block grants, I think a lot of the previous criticisms are really knocked down. The decision is about the open-endedness of Medicaid. Why many people believe that the open-ended funding should continue really boil down to two things. One, it gets put on automatic pilot. And therefore, Congress, in many respects, is removed from a lot of the decision-making on what the program is really costing. Again, when the states ran out of funds for the SCHIP program, they came back to Congress, and Congress put more money, increased the allotments to the states.
Medicaid is on automatic pilot from a Washington standpoint.
It is.
It just grows and grows and grows.
And the open-endedness, it's by nature expansionistic. When the economic times are good, if you can put a dollar into Medicaid, you will at least double your money because you're going to get at least a dollar out of the federal government.
What's your sense? You worked in Washington a long time. Is Washington ready to turn this program, to turn it over into a block grant program?
I think today there is the discussion has to start. And this is why what Congressman Ryan has done is so vitally important and why we're so supportive of that.
Right.
He's starting the discussion because, again, where Washington has put the entitlement programs on automatic pilot, when you look at the president's own debt commission, where they are talking about the entitlement programs plus interest on the national debt, mm-hmm. basically eating up everything in the federal government, that there's nothing else left.
Under Mr. Ryan's plan, this would become a black grant program when?
I believe in 2013 would start, and under the budget resolution itself. And again, dollars actually do continue to increase for Medicaid over time. You look out into a 10-year budget period, so when you get out to 2020, the federal government would be spending more than what it spends in 2013, for example. So the funds do grow. They grow roughly at a 3 or 4% rate each year, but that's compared to a 7 or 8% increase what's in there now. But let me also, this is why I think states that might surprise you will be interested in block grants as well, which is in as the federal dollars go back down, as you pointed out, the federal match rate is declining again.
Yes.
And in rough economic times, when a state has to find a dollar in savings in on the state side, mm-hmm. then it has to forfeit a dollar on the federal side, right?
Right.
But if you can find those savings and have the guaranteed federal dollars there, you can save the money on the state side but keep the federal dollar. Again, where states are talking about moving to value-based purchasing, for example, states will have a greater incentive to do that, and doing payment reform in a way that saves states dollars, but those federal dollars are still there and protected.
Well, this intrigues me. Under black grants, the federal government says, here, Wisconsin, here's X amount of cash. Go and administer the Medicaid program, correct? What determines how much money the feds would give Wisconsin to run our program? Is it driven by poverty? Is it driven by number of children?
It will be a combination of things. Again, when you look back to the examples of the Children's Health Block Grant, when you look back to 97 when we created the TANF program to replace the old AFDC, mm-hmm. those were formulas in there. Again, in the budget resolution, Congressman Ryan says, you know, this is the idea that gets put forward. But the Committee of Jurisdictions, the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, Senate Finance in the Senate.
They're the ones that would write in
the
numbers.
They're the ones that would actually write
and
the
terms. Okay.
Correct.
Well, do you and the governor believe Wisconsin would fare pretty well under a block grant program?
I believe we would, absolutely. That, again, I think the federal micromanagement is forcing us to spend dollars in ways that are unnecessary. I believe that the reforms that we can come up with on payment reform, for example, again, we can then save the state dollars but have the security and the predictability that the federal dollars will still be there. So we can continue to support these vital programs that we need, but it's going to be much more predictable for everyone over time.
Well, in closing, what's your next step? Are you going to present here to the Joint Finance Committee steps to close the $600 million gap?
We have a number of proposals already in the governor's budget, and I think they turn to us in earnest next week.
So we're expecting. Are you up next week?
We expect lively discussions. Yes.
Okay.
We're looking forward to it.
Then, what about people? This is a very emotional issue. The senior care people, and those that work with them, very emotional. So, what would you advise the 1,164,300 people on MA? To do right now?
Well, first on seniors, since you brought them up first, under our proposal, seniors in Wisconsin will have greater prescription drug benefits than seniors in any other state.
And they should hear that. Okay.
Absolutely.
And then the rest of those?
The other populations, people with disabilities, mm-hmm. for example, we want to improve the way our programs work best for them. They need to be in greater charge and control. So we want to triple the number of people who self-direct their own long-term care services so they can decide what services they want and who to get them from. We're going to improve the programs for people with disabilities who need Medicaid. Many of them will need it for their lifetime. We think the program should keep pace with them and let them be in charge of their services. For people who are in the workforce, and again, our message to them, BadgerCare is still a great value. We think it's we think their contribution can be a little bit more than what it is currently, but it's still going to be a great value for them.
But our Medicaid program is at a crossroads, isn't it, Mr. Secretary?
Oh, I think we were at the crossroads about 5 years ago.
And again,
we're now in the situation where literally all new revenue is coming into the Medicaid program. When your viewers are looking at other segments on education, for example, they need to make the connection that Medicaid has grown so quickly and so fast, it is now crowding out other parts of the budget.
Wow. Well, Secretary Dennis Smith, Secretary of the Department of Health Services, thank you for coming in to talk about the most expensive state program, but that's not the way to see it. It's a program that touches people and shapes their health care futures.
Indeed it does, and we're going to make it work better for them and get a greater value for the taxpayer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.